Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Jules Gill, I don't know how to tell you this, but I touched a sloth this week. That's what I did. That's my birthday wish.
Is that a metaphor, mate? I have no idea.
No, it could not be more literal. I had a lovely little birthday trip to a lovely little zoo called the Safari, South Lake Safari Zoo in the UK, to the West Country. And my lovely wife paid for me to hang out with a sloth for a bit, which you do literally because it just hangs off a rope and you feed it bits of pear and strawberry and
amazing.
And
I am all about that sloth life. I mean, imagine that. You just get to like have a new person come in, a new best friend every single like day, and they feed you pear. And you literally just go like, oh man, I'm just going to chill out for a bit. I might go a little bit over here. But
I was sort of hanging backwards, looking at me upside down. And then the guy told me, because we were hanging out with him, he's like, oh, turns out, I didn't know this, that sloths are, they're classed as a class one animal. They're as deadly as tigers. It's just that they can't be bothered to kill anything. So like they just kind of hang there.
Sorry. How? Yeah. That is like that information, somebody telling me that the daddy long legs has one of the most potent like venoms inside its
body.
But
it chooses not to use it.
But it doesn't know. It doesn't have a capability of stinging somebody, so it can't ever manufacture it. It's like that sort of information is like, I don't want to get into something this deep and theological straight away, but intelligent design, what's going on there then?
That's like some weird evolutionary tract thing. But yeah, sloths have, I mean, this is a gaming podcast, we'll get there.
But you have to explain heck is a class one as dangerous as a tiger?
Yeah, well, that's another thing, is the guy told me, he's like, sloths could run after you. Sloths are actually extremely fast. They just can't be bothered. He's like, they just sort of lie there, they can't be bothered, and they have insane core strength. If a sloth gets a hold of you and wants to crush you to death, it can,
right.
It just chooses not to.
Right, okay, what's this guy, when you were talking to him, did he have, instead of a park ranger outfit or a zoo outfit, clown shoes on and a squeaky nose? Because this is sounding like pure jokes, mate, because I cannot envision a sloth running
and with arms up.
And oh yeah, what's he gonna do? He's gonna be like, you want some, mate, with his giant toenails, like trying to like clack it on the floor. What are you on about?
Oh, I tell you what, they had gibbons as well. And just watching the gibbons run around, arms in the air. They were brilliant. I can't recommend animals enough. That's my weekly recommendation.
I know that we have to get into the gaming podcast side of things, but there are so many questions. Like this guy legitimately looked you in the eye and said without a shred of irony that if they could be bothered, it would kill you.
So pretty much.
It is the most dangerous animal on the planet, but it is too lazy to do anything about it.
The thing is though, like I was feeding it like a string of pear. They cut them into strips. I was feeding it like a strip of pear
and it pulled
and
a knife on
there.
You
it was it give me the rest of it. It was eating this pear, lovely little, you know, slurpy noises and everything. And then there was a rat that got out of the cage next to us. So went off to deal with that after telling me that it can kill me if it wants to. And I'm just sitting there and he's like, oh, try and feed it the pear. And if it tries to get it with its claw, make sure you give it to it properly because if it gets annoyed, it'll kill you again. So I was like, well, trying to feed this thing, this like slice of pear, while this other bloke runs after this rat that's in the corner.
I'm not going to lie. Right, mate, this sounds like a setup from your wife to get you killed. I'm sure like this seems like a thing.
The worst hitman assassination ever.
Yeah, because it's a case of like, okay, so he's going to go in there. You're going to tell him about how dangerous it is. So everyone in the room hears how dangerous sloths can be. So it's like, you know, plausible deniability. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to release the rat. You're going to make an excuse and go over there. Yeah, the pear's going to be in his hands and it's going to be like the pear murders sort of mystery.
And the sloth is slowly going to kill him, but it's not that reliable. One last animal fact. Because the room that we were in was full of humongous tortoises, like really, really giant tortoises, like the size of like sort of small toddlers.
What, like the Turtle Pope from Elden Ring?
Well, right, okay, yeah, like the turtle pope. If you had a whole room of turtle popes,
yep.
I don't know if you know what it sounds like when a giant tortoise goes to the toilet, but
No, I do not.
I was in that room, and you know when like really wide pipes sort of like shake in an old house, and it just sounds like the whole world is ending?
So we have like a haunted anus.
Yeah, that's what a tortoise sounds like when it goes to the toilet. It's just sort of like a lot of rattling, and like, and the guy was like, oh, that's what it sounds like when a giant tortoise goes to the toilet.
That is so absolutely insane.
Let me tell you, it was a beautiful time. So in that regard, massive thank you to everybody for sending in all their birthday messages and everything. Loads of people tweeted me stuff. Massive thank you to you
as well
on the day itself.
No,
I got a whole bunch of tweet stuff. I had a bunch of people getting in touch. It was lovely. I had a lovely time. I'm now 33, which is insane.
I know, man. Wait until you catch up to my age. You start just getting more achy. The thing is that like I was told when I was younger that doing more would mean that I'd have a sort of like better life going forward in terms of like doing climbing and sort of like weightlifting and stuff like that. And now I'm just aching 24/7. Like.
I view experience, as in the words of Loki. So yeah, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their birthday messages and stuff. And also, this is the Untitled Banter Podcast. I'm Scott Tailford. You're Jules Gill.
I am indeed. Welcome to the UBP.
Welcome to the UBP, the Untitled Banter Pod, where we put together as many questions, thoughts, talking points, whatever you'd like us to talk about, and we'll get through as many as possible. So, first submission from Willie Araya, who says, did you realize it was the 35th anniversary of Metal Gear 2 weeks ago? Do you still have hopes for anything to happen with this franchise? No, not anymore. I don't even think Konami even acknowledged it.
I mean, is 35 years really like a sort of milestone moment? I can see the 25
years. We're almost 35 years old.
Yeah, but the thing is that like I can understand it for like the 25th anniversary and the 50th anniversary. Like you need those sort of like big numbers to come in. 35 just seems like very like mediocre. Like, it's been my 35th birthday and it's just a case of like, well, I don't feel entirely enthused about it. So maybe Konami are just kind of like, whatevs, mate, innit? Whatevs.
Well, I kind of thought they would do, considering the PlayStation Premium stuff, the Game Pass stuff, maybe just put a Metal Gear collection out. How hard is that? Like, why can't I play the Metal Gears? It's always hard to get a hold of them.
You say that. Konami don't have a great track history with putting out remasters and re-releases. Do you remember what happened with the Silent Hill one, where they obviously had to rebuild it from the ground up and removed the fog? And it was just like,
I thought they might have patched that back in, because that was on sale.
They did eventually patch it back in a bit,
but the textures are all still messed up, because like my wife and I hadn't gone through Silent Hill 2. She'd never gone through it, and I'd not gone through 2 since like 2001 or whatever it was. So I was like, I'll just get the HD collection. Surely they fixed it. All the textures are still a mess. They put the fog back
bless
in.
But bless
just,
him, eh?
It just looks terrible.
It's the thing. My goal now is that I'm going to try and go as long as I can without crapping on some AAA developers. I'm going to just be like, you know what? Bless him. We all make mistakes. I'm trying to like, you know, put positivity out there, even though
that's
most of
good.
Them are sacks of crap. But let's see how it goes.
That kind of segues to the next question from Hugo Brandeo, who says, good day, legends. Best regards from Portugal. Did you guys notice that the delay, potential cancellation of the KOTOR remake is being treated softly by the big outlets? Is it because it was a PlayStation 5 exclusive, or am I going paranoid? Have a great weekend. Now, I don't think that it's been going softly necessarily. I think it's just that it's very matter of fact. Like, two dudes got fired, the game's director and the game's art director, or main art designer, both got fired after showing a vertical slice of the game to the publishers. And it seems like it just wasn't what the publishers wanted. I think it's Saber Interactive. I could be wrong.
Yeah. So first off, a big shout out to Portugal and all our fans across the world. A big love to you. But I'm obviously gutted about this. Like KOTOR 1, one of my favorite games ever made. I don't want to go back to it in its current state, because even though the loads of mods and fan patches across the years have shaped this into be like, it's, you know, there isn't many flaws in this game, but the age is being shown in its like combat mechanics and other things like that. So I don't really want to go back until we get this new version to play through again. I'm happy to wait. However, the fact that they've said that it's going to be delayed indefinitely, or it's like on hiatus indefinitely, it's a real shame, because it makes you think, what was that vertical slice that they showed?
I know.
It's either going to be that they spent way too much time on too little, which is probably going to be the real answer to this, because they want this remaster out the door as quickly as possible, because it's a cash cow, basically. No matter what state it's launched in, they will make an absolute killing. But my other worry is that what if they changed it too much and it didn't have the trappings of modern day gaming industry in it, because whenever they use the term remaster, that's one thing you can usually assume that it's going to be nearly 100% the same as it was before.
Like a visual overhaul.
Yeah, a visual overhaul. But when they use like remakes, and then you start thinking, oh, okay, we're going to change the combat system. Fine. We're going to change maybe like the dialogue thing. Fine again. If you want to make it more interactive, that's completely up to you. Mm-hmm. But it also might come at the expense of microtransactions, loot boxes, all of the bad things that we put it in. Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if it's like, hey, do you like swoop racing? Well, now we've got the swoop racing DLC pack where you can customize your ride. And it's like, oh no, please.
The thing is, like, I went back through KOTOR 1 across last year, and like, there are a lot of crates. There are a lot of bits and pieces that you could randomize the loot for if you wanted to do a modern day thing like that. And what was interesting in the Bloomberg report for this was the Aspire, the dev team, are mostly a port studio. And so apparently they'd shown off various builds of the game to various people, LucasArts and Sony and stuff, and just sort of said, okay, this is what we're aiming for. And they devoted so much money and time to these various vertical slices that apparently that resulted in them eventually bottoming out and just saying, look, we don't have enough time and have enough money to put together the finished one, and we're going to have to push it back to about 2025 or something.
Yeah.
And so it kind of just bottomed out. But it's like you said, it's very interesting. What were the versions they were going for? How close was it to that original game? Because not that much, if anything, plays like that anymore. Like old school BioWare is like a very specific feel of a game.
Yeah.
And I feel like if they were going to modernize it, I'd kind of want Final Fantasy VII Remake style, like proper combat or something.
Yeah, that had,
but
sort
I would
of
take
like,
old school as well.
It had the kind of ATB light bits where you could still select stuff on the fly, but it was much more dynamic and engaging.
Like everything freezes and you sort of dial in like five or six things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, this has just kind of been pushed back indefinitely, and it seems like the developers that are remaining, the quote in the Bloomberg piece, just say that they're aiming for 2025 because they have to once again go from the ground up again.
Yeah, it does surprise me that it was like, okay, fine, that's it. We're just shelving it entirely. Mm. Like not a pushback in terms of time, just the fact that they go, no, that was really strange, because that means that the response to it must have been so vitriolic that they were like, right, we have to basically start again.
Mm-hmm. Like it's not even close to
like,
what
it must have been
something.
A disaster in terms of in the eyes of like LucasArts and the other higher ups.
Well, that's the whole thing about it being a PlayStation exclusive. Like obviously we got the reveal trailer, I think that was earlier this year, and like a lot of people were looking forward to it and everything. And it's like, that is a major reason in theory to invest in a PlayStation 5. So I guess it had to also tick that box, which it mustn't have done.
But it also like smacks of another problem with the industry, which is they released that trailer, they got the hype, but they had literally nothing behind it. If they're still at the vertical slice thing, if they haven't got full approval for the budget, if they haven't got a sort of like foundation, then why are they marketing it to us this early on? To say that we've got this exclusive coming up is like, but it's not going to be for another 3 years. It's like, just tell me when it's a year away. If it's a year away, it's fresh in my mind and I don't get through the hype cycle of being bored of it by the time it comes out. Because you know as well as I do, when they do this with movies, they do teaser trailer, okay, cool, I'm totally on board. There's maybe like a little like snippet there that really gets my juices flowing. But then when it comes to like the release or maybe the week before the film drops, you're on your fifth air quotes final trailer, and you've seen loads of scenes, you've seen tons of the jokes, you've seen the bad guy, maybe you've even seen the ending, like because of the way that they've done you've seen too much of it and your hype is dwindling each time. You're like, I can kind of predict what this movie is going to be. And I use the MCU films as a perfect example of this. You and I have sat down in the past, we've predicted the entire flow of like half of these films and they turned out to be 90% right. And I'm
you can mostly guess
it now.
You
shouldn't be able to do that with films.
True. And in regards to the KOTOR stuff as well, like they could add a whole series of dev diaries, like how, you know, how to approach going back to a classic, how to reapproach the combat and all that kind of stuff. And what is it like being in the shadow of BioWare or the footsteps of BioWare? But instead, like, you know, we got the teaser thing coming to PS5 and then nothing else.
The good example of how to do it right and then catastrophically wrong has been in the recent Skate 4 stuff, because when they put out that, they actually put out probably one of the more honest sort of approaches to, we're remaking this game and it's going to take a while, with that whole sort of like, it'll be ready when it's ready, there's tons of bugs in it, we're not anywhere near, but we're passionate about it. And the amount of positive goodwill that they generated from that, from actually being as close to transparent as a developer can be with their audiences, was actually very refreshing. However, when they next put out their next update that said it's going to be a free-to-play one that's going to have tons of like microtransactions, straight back down again.
I know. I think those terms are just too toxic or poisonous or whatever. I think I like, my personal take on that was that there probably is a way to do a free-to-play Skate that gets people in, gives them a couple of courses, and like a good set of moves to have fun with, and then I guess you monetize the brand deal side of it. But it's all going to come down to the pricing. Like, I absolutely see them charging for licensed shoes, t-shirts, whatever it is. And that stuff might get a bit gross. But I think if you do the Nintendo approach where you like nail the core mechanics, like what they've done with Mario Strikers the Aces tennis game or the golf game, and you nail the core and you plug stuff in afterwards, that seems to be the way that they're kind of going. I know Nintendo stuff is premium, but still.
That's the thing, yeah. Like, you're describing what I just want, which is just a premium thing. I would actually rather have, I know that this sounds pretty hypocritical considering as I've lambasted titles for doing this in the past. Mm-hmm. I would rather pay an upfront cost for a minimal but well-produced core experience that gets free DLC plugged in later on. Mm-hmm. I don't like the idea of free-to-play games because every single one starts to feel homogenous by the end of it because they all use the same trappings to get that microtransactions out of you. It's either paywalls or it's cosmetics and stuff like that. And some are more egregious than others, don't get me wrong. But with Skate, I was just hoping to have a free-form open world that was just honest to the original. And it just doesn't seem like we're going to get that. It still may be a good game. Do not get me wrong. But at the same time, it's hard not to be disappointed with that.
No, I know what you mean. I'm so curious because the thing is, it's EA as well. So it's like they're going to want certain returns. They're going to want certain checks and balances to make sense. And like, as much as they're in like a bit of a new era with them, there was the leaked Black Panther open world game, there's Jedi Fallen Order, like they're doing single player stuff again. I'm going to be waiting and seeing what the monetization model is because, again, like you said, all they've shown off is like wireframe models and barely textured stuff and sort of like teasing, okay, how the hell do we monetize this before we even really know what we're going to be monetizing anyway.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see. Next question from Jacob Wright, who says, hope I had a wonderful birthday. I did. I touched a sloth and hopes that Mr. Egg Daddy is doing well.
He says,
with Stranger Things introducing me to Metallica, has there ever been a show or video game that made you fans of another genre of music? Now, this happened to me this year.
You go first then.
Okay, mine was Olly Olly World. I am just absolutely, I always love synthwave stuff and I got more into chill hop stuff across the last few years, but there's a certain strand, basically the Olly Olly World soundtrack, I think, is one of the most immaculate soundtracks since Hotline Miami, which in itself got me into synthwave. But Olly Olly World stuff is just like chill hop with a little bit more in terms of instrumentation. It's not just one beat for 20 minutes. Those are really, really good songs. Lots of chill stuff, lots of really fun. Still synths in there as well, but really good electronic stuff. And I don't really have the full vocabulary to describe it, but I know that it's such a great vibe. And so Olly Olly World was just my soundtrack for the vast majority of this year.
Nice.
Also shout out to the Persona series, which I think...
Oh man, that's the thing, like, so good. Because I'd never be into that sort of stuff. I'd never choose to actively put that on. Yet after playing that game, 4 especially, I just put it on and I was like, this is cool. I can listen to this like in and out. And 5 is the one that everyone was doing. But
5 really blew up, the main theme, yeah.
Yeah, when we were back in the office, back in our old one, I remember Andy Murray put on Persona 4's tracks of the sort of like calming rain one, and it was like a 10-hour thing. We just had it on in the in the office for like a good day, and no one complained, even though it was the same song repeating. Like,
because I do the Spotify song radio artist radio, like to like do that whole thing of like, okay, what algorithmically what other artists belong in this group? I found loads of people through that. But yeah, with Persona stuff, that genre I think is just city pop, and so whenever I've googled city pop, I've always found similar stuff to that. So yeah, shout out to Olly Olly World soundtrack and Persona soundtracks and whatever those genres are.
Yeah.
But those will be mine.
In terms of like, so we're talking about genres that we found because of video games, is that correct?
Yeah, like any sort of show or video game that made you a fan of another genre of music.
I guess like I've always been a fan of like any sort of like electronica style things. I have quite like an eclectic music taste. There's very few things that I don't like, or at least can't see the positives in it. But I do remember being kind of blown away when I first started listening to Jet Set Radio Future's soundtrack.
Nice.
Because I think that it was the... I'll do a bad rendition of it because it's the like, understand the concept of love. Like, it was the concept of love was the first thing I heard from it. And I was like, this sort of like aggressive, almost like digital punky aesthetic to it. And obviously it was tons of funk. Like every single song had so much funk. So I actually started listening to other electric or funk or Japanese proggy style bands out of that. And I came across Tricot, which is, or Tricot, I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's these It's a Japanese, all-woman Japanese math metal band that is absolutely fantastic. Sense. And weirdly enough, like years after the fact, I got to see them live. And I was just oh, this is perfect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would shout out the Tony Hawk's games, I think, as much as I grew up
influential.
On, you know, pop-punk stuff anyway. Like the Tony Hawk's, like, I mean, I would just put back out again with the remasters or the remakes. But yeah, those games only re-solidifies my love of like pop-punk and early 2000s rock stuff.
And you know
just
what?
Bang on.
They also had like, because of this choice selection of rap songs as well, it really does bridge the gap between the rock and rap and metal side of things, because it's like fans of metal sometimes dismiss rap and vice versa because they are tonally very different in terms of it. But when you meet in the middle with these sort of like incredibly catchy riffs and like stupidly clever lyrical writing, it's like there are so many constants that are between those two genres that can connect fans.
Well, it's like that Anthrax song, like the with Public Enemy, all-time great.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Next question from Steve, who says, what were our first days at What Culture like? Now, I don't think we've ever talked about this.
We possibly done it on like streams here and there, like just recounting stuff, but incredibly nerve-wracking. I won't lie. Like when I walked through the door, I felt like huge imposter syndrome. I went around the office and was not sure who to introduce myself to and or how to sort of do things. So I just plopped myself down on a desk, went into the main office and told my boss, I was like, hey, I am here. I'm going to start writing this.
I am Jules.
And it was a case of just like a nod and like, yep, okay. And I was like, right, okay. So
I think me and you had been messaged about it. I knew you, back then it was all, you were doing some voiceover stuff from the articles that were on the website. Mm-hmm. And I knew that, I think I'd messaged you to be like, okay, like this is this game, this is whatever. You'd ask me stuff and we talked a little bit.
Yeah.
So I loved when you finally came up and I remember I turned around, I was making a cup of tea in the morning. I turned around, you were there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, he's right here. Like, hello, like hello, Jules. But it's, and it sort of went from there.
It's such like an interesting vibe, because when you've spoken to somebody for as long as we had done, like obviously I was talking to like Peter Austin and Ben Potter as well a bit when they were still working for us. It was a case of like getting the gaming crew together was interesting. And then walking through the front door and realizing that there were all the other teams sharing the same space as well. So it was like, I sat down next to Adam Pacitti and was like, he was my guy. He's like, oh, don't worry. I'll take I'll take care of you. Don't worry. Like if there's any questions, like you just let me know sort of thing. And it put me at ease knowing that there was a lot of friendly people up there. I won't say that my first weeks were easy. I found a real struggle to get used to recording when I knew people could hear me. I got flustered with the whole like having to work to deadlines that were shaped around having studio time at mandated things or like having to get out of the studio if I was taking too long because people wanted to go
every single channel was sharing the same studio space.
I think I had to do a news video on my first day or maybe the second day that was my first in front of camera thing for a while. And over the years, I've gotten more comfortable with how I look. But at that time, I was definitely going through a phase of feeling genuine discomfort in my own body.
Okay.
Especially with my skin, like I had, I have very shiny skin. Like it's been very apparent. The internet's made me very aware of it. But
you're
like,
an Adonis, brother.
But my I had flaring up acne that was due to stress as well at the time. So it's obviously those are the two things that people are going to notice immediately when they click on a video, especially in high definition.
I couldn't hide at that point.
I couldn't hide behind just being a disembodied voice. Mm. I just had to live that. But I'm glad that I did that trial by fire. Of having, I will admit, a bad couple of videos. Like, I didn't carry any conversations. I wasn't able to think on my feet. I wasn't comfortable. And so I made lots of judders and mistakes.
I think it'll be those sort of things that maybe, because I honestly, genuinely, never in a million years have I thought Jules' skin is anything other than perfect and exactly what it needs to be. Whereas, because I myself have really bad eczema and I'm always thinking like, oh my God, this red blotch is so obvious. And it's like, to me, I guess it is. But I think
that's so bizarre because again, I've never noticed that.
No. And it's like, everyone has those things about themselves that they think are super obvious. And like you said, like on those first videos, you thought you stuttered or whatever. Whereas genuinely, when we did stuff together, I was like, you are so fully formed. Like we are so able to leap on something and just talk, which obviously is why we wanted to do the Entitled Banter Pod in the first place. But yeah, we've always just been able to just talk about stuff. And I think that as much as people do doubt themselves or whatever, I always thought you arrived so fully formed. I was the guy looking at you going, that's how a presenter should be.
Oh, cheers, brother.
So like genuinely, I was always like, yeah, we need to like match that level kind of thing. And I forget what our very first news video would be, but I guess something from 2016 maybe. Or
yeah, it would have been a long, long time ago. But I just remember like sharing the screen space with you especially was just so comforting because the thing is, in the best possible way, you've not changed since the day that I met you. You've evolved as a person, but in terms of your presenting style, it's just been constant. So it was like
I've got less shouty. I don't know why, I think it was a nerve thing. Well, if you go back to the old videos, I don't know why. Maybe it was nerves because like you said, you had to get used to recording. I definitely did as well. And I used to try and improvise everything like the whole time, which I can still improvise stuff, depends what the point is.
Yeah.
But there was some stuff where I would just kind of dive in, hit record. Okay, I know what I'm talking about, go. And then sometimes when I was reading stuff out, I would just get really loud and shout it. I don't know why, but like if you go back to some of those old videos, and I didn't remember shouting it, but they were just recorded so much louder. And I think maybe it was some compensation for making sure I nailed the take or whatever it was, but I think everyone has those things. Yeah,
I will definitely say that there's the way that I record my stuff now, it's a hyperbolic version of myself. It's a more exaggerated slightly, but it's rooted in, you know, my core principles of like, if I like something, I will like praise it. If I don't like something, I'll tell you about it. And in between those points, I'm always going to try and preach the, you know, positivity wherever I can. But when I came into What Culture, I thought that you had to have a gimmick. I was brought up on the idea that like it was kind of like wrestling, that you would have to have a gimmick in a way to get over with the crowd. So I went in there with an attitude that was like, my first couple of videos I recorded them at speed so that I would hit that sort of Yahtzee flow and of a zero punctuation. And I would also try and get like more of like a dismissive and over the top anger level that was very popular around that time with video YouTube critics.
That is what like, massively taken off for us too. Like, I mean, that was, you know, they were incredibly talented as a as the wrestling team or whatever back then. For you to come in, that's obviously what you would have gone with.
Exactly.
That's what made sense.
So you think that that's a way to present yourself, but after a while you realize that that burns you out because you get known for things either that you don't believe in necessarily or that don't reflect who you are as a person that evolves. And I've always loved like hopping from gimmick to gimmick to gimmick across my time here because of the fact that as you change, you develop new interests and you pursue them. But I did notice that if you do stick to one gimmick, if that is your one thing and it owns you and then you can't break free from it. And then when you do, you just get reminded again and again of people who only liked you because of that. And it's
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Plus like the amount of stuff that we do, like if we're on camera so much, we're doing podcasts, like you can't be in, if it's kayfabe, you can't be in kayfabe all the time. You're going to just, you know, just be you at some point. One overall piece of advice I would give anyone who is recording stuff, because you mentioned like you thought that you were stuttering on stuff. I've definitely done flubs and mistakes and whatever. Yeah. 9 times out of 10, you just roll through it. Like there's always an assumption that you have to do everything perfect. Whereas just talking, and if you stumble a little bit, you just, you know, you take a second, you rephrase the same way that you would if you were in conversation. And that's completely natural. No one's expecting you to nail every single second of something.
Yeah. 100%.
Unless it, like, you know, and plus you can be saved in editing or whatever if it's something that doesn't need to be live anyway.
Yeah, totally agree. And there's something to be said about just taking a break when even in the middle of recording. Like, we have a team of editors here, and I'm good friends with nearly every single person that edits my stuff. So that means that I have no issues with showing like mistakes or getting frustrated because I know that in that moment that it's a conversation between myself rather than between them, and I shouldn't be thinking about what they think of me because I know they don't judge me on that. So if you are recording and you are editing your own stuff and you are struggling with a line or struggling getting a thought out, just stop for a moment, really digest what's on the page in front of you. I can't stress how many times that I've seen people, including myself, look at a line of dialogue and say to themselves, I know this, and then get it wrong. And then say, I know this, and do it again and again and again, and keep getting it wrong. And it's because you're not looking at the individual words and digesting the information you need to get out. And if it's a long piece of like a paragraph, pick out your three or four keywords and just remember the connecting points between them. You can basically get through any conversation if you have your interconnected keywords. That's all you got to focus on. Don't be too hard on yourself. Take a 5-minute break. The editor does not care. They literally will look at the video footage, they'll look at the blank space, and then just cut it out in 1 second. It does not matter. So don't be too hard on yourself.
I think the keyword like method as well, that massively helps me in terms of improvisation stuff. Like I cannot for the life of me memorize stuff. If you give me a paragraph, a few sentences, okay, memorize that and then say it to camera. I cannot in a million years. But if you tell me like when we need to talk about the combat in The Last of Us, then I can give you a 20-minute breakdown off the top of my head. Way better. And I know that maybe there's vague stuff that I want to hit. But yeah, those are things that I guess we just picked up over time as because we together learned how to do this as What Culture became a YouTube channel. And not just a website, which is to say that, I mean, my first day was back when the team was like 6 people big.
Yeah, I know. You have had a much smaller team experience, didn't you?
Yeah, so I came in, like there's not that much to my first day really, because I came in, I was initially doing freelance stuff where I would go into the office and just sit down, do a couple of articles. It was all website based. We didn't even have a YouTube channel. Back then, like I said, it was like 6 people, like sort of 3 writers, 1 coder and 2 bosses. And we used to just write as much as possible. And I was doing everything back then, like film and TV and music and stuff. And so it was just like that. My first official day was just like my freelance days, where I would just come into the office, sit down, morning, make a cup of coffee. Okay, what's happening in various industries? But let's write about that. And so it was just, we used to try and hit 2 articles a day, 10 a week if you could, because it was just writing.
That's intense, man.
I know, man. That was all like foot to the floor style turnaround stuff back then, because it was just the website. So you were trying to make a website that would sustain that amount of people.
God, that's like, I'm surprised that you guys didn't burn out on that, because that is a lot of work to put on to, because we usually allocate between 4 to 5 hours per article nowadays, don't we?
Yeah. I think it depends what it is.
Because you have to do the research. You actually, I know that our boss did just write about what you know, but you can't know everything, and you need to research some stuff that does take a lot of time.
True. I think that's the thing that did work in like my favor, or does it work in our favor sometimes, is that sometimes you do just know what you want to write about.
Yeah. And like, so, you like, have played pretty much every game that has ever come out. And I do see you as a font of knowledge when it comes to, have you played this game? Yes. Is it good? Yes. Okay, cool. I'll probably play it then. Like,
but that's the thing. I think it helps if it's franchise coverage or IP coverage. If it's something that you're playing anyway, then you come into the day knowing what you want to talk about. So it's like, okay, I know my thoughts. I can get them down. And coming out of university or whatever, you're used to, you know, getting to the meat of the point that you want to say and stuff like that. But yeah, so my first day was just writing my ass off, because that's what freelance was anyway. And then things changed over time. Next question from Haley from Canada, who says, thoughts on the new PlayStation Plus service so far? Is streaming PlayStation 3 games better than it was on PlayStation Now? Is there enough on the service to recommend it at this point? Now, I know you don't have this, Jules, so
no,
I'll really quickly mention this. I think it's fine. I don't think it's worth the extra money. I wouldn't get the PlayStation Premium, the top tier stuff, because for me, and maybe this will change very soon, because Sony just announced what their PlayStation Plus monthly games are going to be and not what the premium stuff is. Maybe that'll change, but they've barely acknowledged the fact that this is meant to be an archive legacy service. Like, this is, people are paying an extra tier for PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, and PS3 games, and you can only stream the PS3 games, and they've barely done anything with that. They've not got out there and said, we can't wait to get Resident Evil 2, we can't wait to get Dino Crisis, we can't wait to get whatever. There's nothing. And so their latest update, which is just regular PlayStation Plus stuff, is that the Yakuza series is coming to PlayStation Plus.
Oh, it's that's
like
cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Like, all the Yakuza games. Although you'd be insane to play all the Yakuza games in a row. Like, that's one of my favorite IPs, and that's like 500
that's
hours of game.
Overkill a bit, yeah. Isn't it, on that front?
So, like, they've got that stuff out there, and on that graphic for the Yakuza stuff, it has the logos for the different tiers of PlayStation Plus. But for me, they've completely dropped the ball on reassuring people who paid the extra money why they did it in the first place. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit... I think you're better off waiting. I think you might as well just get the middle tier, because that gets you the likes of Stray, which just came out, and Yakuza and everything like that. Streaming games, it's the same. Like, it's 1080p, it's trying to hit 30 FPS. If you're lucky, they feel like games from 2007. They don't feel like they're upscaled whatsoever. So yeah, I don't think it's worth the extra money. I would get the middle tier or the just stick with what you had, basically. I don't think it's worth the premium stuff just yet. I'm hoping that as I say that, I low-key trigger a Tekken 3 announcement or something.
Yeah.
Because they need something big.
But Sony watching this just goes like, right, well, Scott, you've made me pushing the button, which just says release all the games.
Push the Tekken 3, the Tekken 3 klaxon has sounding, and enough people have said it. Next question from RB, who says, with TMNT Shredder's Revenge taking reviewers by storm with its fun and modern take on classic beat 'em up, on the classic beat 'em up genre, which other franchise would you love to see get the same treatment? Personally, I would love a new X-Men game. That's such a shout.
So do you mean like as in the X-Men arcade game getting that sort
I guess
of
it would
like
have
same...
to be like, yeah, like slick 2D animation, great soundtrack. It just plays. Like TMNT just goes.
It really does.
Game.
Like every single time that I load it up, I just have this huge, stupid smile on my face because it just is lovely. Like I know that we say that it's like, oh, it's a love letter to its source material. It's just like, this is a romance novel. Like it's got the fake sort of like kiss lipstick marks all over it as well. This is the bee's knees, my friend.
Yeah, I think it's immaculate. I never like 2D brawler stuff. That wasn't my jam when I was a kid. Like
you
I
have mentioned,
Rage.
Yeah.
Mine's always 3D. So I think if I went back to stuff, it would be the Simpsons game. I guess if you got the rights from Fox and you sort of did the animation really well, you could kind of bring that back. But I don't have that many pulls when it comes to 2D brawlers. I don't know if it's more your bread and butter than mine.
See, I was raised on the sort of SNES stuff. That's so I've got like all of the 2D realm is at my fingertips, as it were. So I'm thinking that if I would want to pick something from that back catalogue to basically unleash on the modern era, have you ever played a game called Sunset Riders?
I've heard of it. I think I've seen pictures of it.
There's a PS4 version of it as well that came out that added in two new characters, and I thought that it was absolutely fantastic. But I'd love to see, it's like a side-scrolling shoot 'em up, kind of similar to Contra, but it also has moments where it goes into a shooting gallery where then shoot into the background and you have like you take control of a cursor while also piloting your person to make sure they don't get hit at the same time.
Did we play that with Rich once?
Maybe, yes.
I played that.
It's like a Wild West themed, and it's just absolutely fantastic. Well, it's like cyberpunk Wild West, and it's absolutely brilliant. I would love to see a brand new take on that formula with that character and those characters and those settings. I just think it would be absolutely brilliant.
Something like, anything that sort of takes the love and care side of it. Like you said, it's like the people who made Shredder's Revenge, they really care. Like every frame of animation, the fact that you're reviving a character with a pizza slice or just doing little sound bites and stuff, it comes across perfectly. Final question from Christopher Snow, who says, I know I'll get crap for this, but is getting another GTA that won't be as good as Vice City, because nothing ever will be, really worth losing other IPs that have been Rockstar's best work, i.e. Red Dead, LA Noire, and Bully? I don't know if you've seen the GTA 6 stuff, Jules, but it seems like that's what they're going towards. It's where we're returning to Vice City. That's all the eggs are in the GTA 6 basket. The remakes of or remasters or whatever of GTA 4 and the original Red Dead have been canned. So it seems like Rockstar are just full steam ahead on more GTA.
Now, I feel really, really upset that they have canned the remakes, because I do feel like they could have been good. However, when you consider the apocalyptic poop storm that was the GTA definitive edition, it was just... maybe for the best if that one goes.
Yeah.
What I would have loved, just on a personal note, is if they just gotten in touch with Capcom and they just been like, look, can we just buy Red Dead Revolver off you and redo that? Just remake that from the ground up. Because I went back and played that the other day. I Love that game.
It's so good. It's so arcadey.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. Do you ever play the multiplayer mode on it?
Very, very lightly. When it first came out, I was more the single player story stuff.
It was the reason I got back into playing it is because I actually had to load it up to just double check that there was a feature in it, because I'm writing an article on multiplayer, tiny multiplayer details that made the game sort of thing.
Nice.
And it was like at the beginning of certain missions, you would have the shootout. And I know that they brought it back for Red Dead on... Actually, they brought it back for...
Oh, the actual like duel stuff.
Yeah, they brought it back. Yeah. It's like how you start the match sort of thing. Mm. And it was like the person who got it in first place got like
that. Everyone's in one big row and then you have to like...
Yeah,
I remember that.
And they brought it back for those games there, but they just did it better, I feel, in this opening one there, because it was like only four people. It was super tense and it was all couch co-op. So you'd be talking to your friends like, let's shoot Dave. Come on, everyone shoot Dave. And the final moment, you betray that person and then end up shooting them. You're like, and you could see their cursor moving slowly across you. Like, no, don't shoot me. Bang.
I remember thinking the art style was really cool. Like, I know it was way more rounded. It wasn't as realistic
like
as Red
cartoony,
Dead 1 and 2.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, for me, that played into how, like you said, it's really arcadey. That's a proper run and gunner. And like, when you do the thing, I think you like freeze time and you can paint the cursor over loads of different enemies. Mm. And then Red just takes out like 50 dudes at once. I remember thinking that was so cool. Yeah, that's a massive shout. I think in regards to Rockstar, for me, they're a bit of a lost cause just because of like the things like the Definitive Edition that just made me go, you guys don't care enough about the things that you should care about. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious what GTA 6 is with a completely different creative team behind it.
Do you know what though? Just on a quick side note, I am really happy that we are finally getting a female protagonist in this. And I really hope that if we're going down this, what they keep on saying is a Bonnie and Clyde situation.
Like a bank heist
if it is a two-player fully co-op all the way through that story mode, that would be absolutely amazing.
That would be a hell of a way to go.
Like, because the thing is that if they're putting all the eggs into the basket here, then why not do that? Have it so that person isn't necessarily tied to the story in the sense of, they aren't necessary to the story, but a second player could jump in and help you through the campaign as a person to do that, because then you avoid any sort of like, oh, well, you're technically meant to be over here when this was happening sort of thing.
Yeah,
but it could be amazing if you have fully co-op as a single player.
I'm kind of like, I am up for that, because I like looking into the Bonnie and Clyde stuff, that is like this old school, like American, like it happened in real life, but it is you know, fondly talked about thing. And it's like, if you do a series of really cool bank heists that are sort of planned out like GTA 5's were, but you have really cool writing between the couple, that is like, because one of them is Latina, the female, but they have not said who the other person is. I like the idea of a couple going on a whole bunch of bank heists and there's real reason for you to make it out with the money, as opposed to in GTA 5, it was like, sure, we're criminals, we make money, whatever.
Yeah.
I think you can do a cool story around that. Kind of like, is it Natural Born Killers? I forget which movie it is.
Yes, it is with Woody Harrelson.
With the couple and stuff. I think True Romance is kind of like that too. And I think you can pull from those things.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it fits in perfectly with the over-the-top world that is Vice City. Because if we're exploring it from where it was in the 80s and returning to it there, I'm actually personally hoping that we get a smaller, more compact, but more alive city. Because I thought that the GTA 5... map was, for me, the perfect size. You never really got lost. There wasn't like too much in the way of just barren wilderness with nothing to do. There was always something to see or go towards. But there are some games that obviously, like, you know, you've got your Far Cry 6s that have recently come out, and that is too big for me. That is too big.
Yeah, I think for GTA, I mean, they said that apparently it started out as massive chunks of all like North America, South America, and it got like reduced down to be this sort of focused city with more interiors than ever or something.
Interesting.
It seems promising. I think, and they've also said, though, it's probably not going to be coming until about 2025-ish.
That's fair. I'm happy to wait for something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot more GTA Online to fill in between now and then. But yeah, for now, this has been the Untitled Badger podcast. I've done a double take, but you guys won't know because I'll cut out the original take and then leave this in anyway. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me, mate.
Yes, a massive thank you to all of you for sending in your questions, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
UBP.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.